Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is WBUR's special coverage of Hurricane Sandy. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, co-host of Radio Boston.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Hurricane Sandy is slowly intensifying here in Massachusetts. Winds and rains are expected to peak later this afternoon and into the evening.
But while much of Massachusetts waits, Sandy has already lashed other parts of the eastern seaboard. Some 60 million people live in the hurricane's path. Here's President Barack Obama earlier this afternoon.
Because of the nature of this storm, we are certain that this is going to be a slow-moving process through a wide swath of the country, and millions of people are going to be affected. So the most important message that I have for the public right now is please listen to what your state and local officials are saying.
Massachusetts officials are saying stay inside, stay safe. We'll hear more from emergency management officials later this hour. We'll also hear from WBUR meteorologist Mark Rosenthal with an update from the storm. But first, let's go to Cape Cod briefly to a brave storm watcher earlier this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm Cassie Cooper. I live in Harwich, and I just wanted to see how much the storm is coming up, and the water's crazy.
Cassie Cooper a little earlier today on Cape Cod. We'll check in now with how states around New England are dealing with Hurricane Sandy. And while Massachusetts is beginning to feel the storm's strength, further south it's even worse. Catherine Welch is the news director for Rhode Island Public Radio, and she joins us now from Providence. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, Anthony.
So give us a sense of what you're seeing down in Providence and along the coast of Rhode Island.
Well, the winds are really just starting to pick up. Now, there are no reports of major trees or power lines down. We are waiting for a number of updates by state officials and National Grid on some of that information. But right now, it's a misty rain, which has been this way all morning, and winds just really picking up and raking across the state.
Now, of course, Rhode Island is known for its ability to flood. Are management, local officials saying that that is a concern there, particularly along the coast?
That is a big concern, and this is the ocean state, so there is a lot of coast. What they're especially looking at is between 8 and 9 o'clock tonight. That's when high tide is expected to hit. It's a full moon. And what Providence has done is they have this hurricane barrier. It was constructed after Hurricane Carol hit in 1954 and just flooded downtown Providence. So they have this barrier they're putting at the head of the Narragansett Bay. And what they're worried about is this high tide, this full moon, this storm surge that's going to kind of bump up against that barrier and kind of slosh back down the bay. And they're concerned about these low-level coastal communities sort of south of Providence. So they're really bracing to see what's going to happen. Again, that's going to be around 9 o'clock tonight.
Mm. And Catherine, any word about power outages and that sort of thing?
The numbers have been going up and down all morning. I think we're somewhere around 2,000 right now. The numbers have been changing all morning. National Grid and the governor are getting ready to hold a press conference here in about 20 minutes. I think we'll have a better sense of that.
That's great. Catherine Welch, news director for Rhode Island Public Radio, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Moving on to Connecticut, where earlier today, Governor Daniel Malloy said the state could see a storm surge up to 11 feet along the coast, making this the worst weather in Connecticut in the past 70 years.
In fact, the last time we saw anything like this was never.
John Dankosky is news director for the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network and host of Where We Live. He joins us now from Winsted, Connecticut. So, John, how is it where you live right now? What's the weather like?
Well, right now it's starting to get windy, and there's just a little bit of a light rain falling. In a lot of ways, it's a lot like what we heard Catherine talk about in Rhode Island. I think the difference here is that Governor Malloy has been very aggressive with trying to react in advance. He closed down all state highways at 1 o'clock to all but emergency vehicles, and he got all the trucks off the road at around 11. He's reacting like this in part because we suffered through two really bad storms last year, Irene and then the freak snowstorm that happened just about 1 year ago. knocked out power to thousands. It knocked down many, many trees across the state. And he's just trying to be as cautious as possible in advance of this storm coming ashore here.
So, John, we've heard that it's southern New England that may really feel the fullest force of Hurricane Sandy. There have been evacuations further south than you in New York City. Have any cities or towns in Connecticut been evacuated?
Yeah, a whole list of towns have ordered mandatory evacuations, of course. Some people are heeding those evacuations and some people aren't. Essentially, what town officials in some of these coastal communities are saying is, if you decide to stay in your home, we are not sure that we'll be able to help you if roads get cut off. The problem is, again, as in Rhode Island, a storm surge that's expected later on tonight with the high tide that could be double what happened with Irene. And we had one whole neighborhood, Cozy Beach in East Haven, that got almost washed away last year in Irene. And we've heard reports of homes that have barely been rebuilt from last year that are under serious threat of getting washed away again this year.
Huh. So water and storm surge, a potentially huge problem in Connecticut. In Massachusetts here, we're already hearing that more than 40,000 people are out of power. What's the power outage situation there?
Again, the numbers are sort of going up and down, and we're hoping that things won't get as bad as last year. Of course, CL&P, United Illuminating, the two big power companies here, are saying it could be up to 800,000 power outages, just like what happened last October. The good thing is, because most of the leaves are down, it is less likely trees will blow over in the winds that are expected to be in the 50 to 75 mile an hour range starting sometime tonight.
John Denkoski is news director for the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network and host of Where We Live. John, thanks so much and stay safe.
You're welcome. Thanks.
And let's continue north now to New Hampshire, where this morning residents in Hampton Beach along the coast told WMUR they were cautiously optimistic.
You know, from what I'm hearing, the surge isn't going to be as high here as it is down south.
We're just erring on the side of caution, I think. So we're making preparations and precautions just to accommodate the storm, that's all.
This morning, Governor John Lynch announced a state of emergency a few hours ago. Joining us now from Concord is Josh Rogers, senior reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. And hi, Josh.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Very well, thanks. And thanks for joining us. Tell us what Governor Lynch is anticipating in terms of federal assistance, for example, or what's he saying about what you folks might be facing up there?
Well, the governor said he's been in touch with FEMA. He hasn't said if he's expecting assistance. The governor's known for being prepared with weather emergencies. He said that he wants people to over-prepare. So he's been in touch with local officials and deployed some National Guard members to the coast, for instance. But the storm is really just ramping up here. The winds are high. There are about 24,000 people without power. So everyone's just watching at this point.
So what's the biggest concern up there in New Hampshire? We've heard a lot of concern here in Massachusetts. And as we heard from Connecticut and Rhode Island, it's coastal flooding. What's the big concern up there?
It's less flooding here and more about falling trees and power outages. As I said, 24,000 people are without power right now. That number is expected to climb. The National Weather Service is saying that the wind's going to be the strongest for the next 6 to 8 hours with gusts of about 55 to 75 miles an hour in the center and southwestern parts of the state. That could obviously fell a lot of trees. Leaves are down, so emergency types say that's one thing that may keep fewer trees from falling, but it's mainly the wind that people are watching.
And Josh, a big question, the effect that all this is having on the election season up there. We've read notices from politicians asking people to remove their lawn signs for safety, for example.
Yeah, so that's a rare bit of consensus so close to the election. Both Republican and Democratic chairmen have been asking partisans to take down their political signage for a little while, at least. And there have also been the suspension of, you know, campaign events. Vice President Biden was supposed to be in Keene today. He was rerouted to Ohio. Mitt Romney was going to be here tomorrow. That's been canceled. First Lady Michelle Obama was going to be in Durham over the weekend. That was canceled. And Ann Romney also had an event canceled. So the activity has been tamped down. Some of the local candidates are still stumping. There was a big congressional debate tonight that was going to be broadcast on WMUR. that's been postponed, and they're going to be the rest of the week. We're supposed to be debates on Channel 9, and those are the big debates of the season. And it'll be interesting to see if those end up happening.
Well, we're going to be talking a little later in the show about the political fallout of all of Hurricane Sandy in the midst of this political season. Josh Rogers, senior reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And right next door in Vermont, while Hurricane Sandy may not be bringing a storm surge to the state, it's bringing a surge of memories, that of Tropical Storm Irene, which left the state, much of the state, underwater last year. Sandy Gaffney lost her home to Irene, and today she told Vermont Public Radio this.
You can't get past it yet. I mean, even the way it is now, it looks better than it did right after the flood, but it just always brings it back. And now we're getting another one.
Another one. Well, joining us now from Colchester, Vermont, is Mitch Wertlieb, host of Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio. Mitch, welcome to Radio. Welcome to special coverage here. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
So, what's it like up there in Vermont right now?
Well, if you were to look out the window in the Colchester, Burlington area where I am, you wouldn't see an unusual day at all. It's a little bit overcast, but there's some sun poking through. The winds have not picked up yet. This storm is going to pretty much affect us moving south to north, with the worst of it expected to hit in southern Vermont, the Brattleboro area, and we're also hearing that the Rutland area might get hit pretty hard, and then the Northeast Kingdom, which is a lot closer to the border with Canada, where some of the winds are expected to be pretty, pretty harsh.
Now, Mitch, a lot of people are saying that one thing they're concerned about regarding Sandy is that it's a slow-moving storm. It might, hit a weather front the further north and west that it moves. Does that mean that flooding once again is a concern in Vermont?
It's a possibility, but we're all crossing our fingers that that's not going to happen. I spoke with one of our local meteorologists this morning, and he said that there isn't much rain expected with the storm. Like in New Hampshire, we're really looking at the wind being the biggest problem. Thousands and thousands of power outages are expected, but the rain shouldn't be too bad. He said that if you were to take this storm and look at Irene being a 5 on a scale of 1 to 5, this one he expects to be about a 3, and again, if we can get away with not having too much flood possibility, then, power outages people will take after what happened last year.
Well, after what happened last year, I wonder how are Vermonters, more generally looking at Hurricane Sandy? Because I heard that lots of Vermonters are still waiting for their FEMA insurance checks from the damage they experienced last year.
Yeah, the FEMA situation is really difficult. Even with the state, FEMA at one point said that there would be plenty of funding to replace the state office complex in Waterbury that was flooded out. They've backtracked on that now. We're not sure if that money is coming. It's just been a very slow process, the FEMA mitigation, hazard mitigation program, and some people have been waiting and waiting to find out if they can get approved. Now, a state list did come out recently that had a good number of people who lost their homes approved for FEMA mitigation, but there are still some that are waiting. It's really a psychological thing here. It's a very emotional component, like the clip you played a moment ago. Folks that were affected by Irene are looking at this and saying, oh, no, not again. It's not that they expect it'll be as bad, but it really is emotionally raw for a lot of people here because the damage with Irene was absolutely devastating.
Mitch Wertlieb, host of Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio. Thanks so much, Mitch.
My pleasure.
So a quick update there from around New England. Let's check in now with WBUR meteorologist Mark Rosenthal with the latest on how this storm is moving, where it is. Mark Rosenthal, give us an update. Where is the storm located? And tell us what kind of power it's packing.
Well, I'll tell you, things have been really happening within the last hour. The rains have really come into Boston. The winds are really starting to howl at the present time. So let me break that down for you in a moment. But on the 2 o'clock advisory, the storm, if you're plotting, is 38.3 north, 73.1 west, about 175 miles south-southeast of New York City. It's moving quickly off to the northwest at 28 miles an hour. Top winds are 90 miles per hour with gusts to 100 miles per hour, and the pressure continues to fall. Now down to 940 millibars. That's 27.46 in your barometer. This is even more intense than the hurricane of 1938. And this storm will be making landfall just to the north of Philadelphia early this evening. We're talking about moderate coastal flooding in Boston and Plum Island tonight at high tide at midnight. There'll be heavy to severe coastal flooding as a potential on Cape Cod, on the south side of Cape Cod, down in Narragansett Bay, and of course Long Island with a very strong east and southeast wind there. I just very quickly want to talk about some observations here.
Sure, Mark, go ahead.
As of 2 o'clock this afternoon at Logan Airport, the wind from the northeast now gusting to 56 miles an hour. Bedford, Mass., the wind gusting to 60 miles an hour. Blue Hill gust to 64 miles per hour. In Martha's Vineyard, the wind's now gusting to 65 miles per hour. So the wind field is coming up, as we've been talking about all morning long. Strong winds being felt on the Rhode Island coast as well. Very heavy rainfall now falling through Hartford, Connecticut. And I also just want to switch gears here on my computer and just call up a radar loop and tell you that within the last hour, there has been a convergence zone that's developed right over Massachusetts. And what that means is winds have turned east over Cape Cod. They're blowing northeast from Boston north and west, so the air converges. And that's why there's been a very heavy band of rain setting up from the Boston area, points north up around Route 2, down to Providence, into Hartford, and more areas of rain are coming in from the Atlantic Ocean. So we're going to get soaked for a time in Boston tonight with some local street and basement flooding. This is brand new within the last hour. This zone just formed right on top
of us.
So, as feeder bands continue to come in from the ocean.
So lots of moisture with all of those winds. WBUR meteorologist Mark Rosenthal will be checking in with you over the next hour. Many thanks.
Excellent. Thank you.
So let's stay focused on Massachusetts, where, as we've been hearing, the storm has already knocked out power to more than 40,000 residents across the state. We're joined now by Peter Judge, Public Information Officer for the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency. He joins us from the State Emergency Management Bunker in Framingham. And Peter, what's your biggest focus and area of concern right now?
Well, short term, it remains the coastal flooding. We're still working very, very closely with those communities along the coast, giving them the latest information. Many of them now are involved with local evacuation issues and setting up shelters as well. We also have pre-positioned a lot of assets in case there have to be rescues to be made. But statewide, the power outages are going to be our focus as this event unfolds. Obviously, the coast is one thing, but then we have the entire Commonwealth, which somehow is going to have some impact with this wind and therefore potentially could lose large numbers of customers.
Do you have a sense as to how many it could be? I mean, 40,000 already, and we aren't even in the strongest part of the storm.
Oh, that's correct. Last year, I want to say during Gloria, I think we hit about 800,000 customers or so. This certainly has the potential of being much greater than that. But again, with these type of events, you never quite know. If a tree goes down and takes out the right line or the right transformer, you can literally put thousands of people in the dark. That tree doesn't go down, those people are going to have their lights. So it's really hard to predict.
Now, as Hurricane Sandy moved over the Caribbean a little earlier this week and over the weekend, it killed more than 60 people. Tragically, are there any reports of injuries or fatalities in New England or Massachusetts so far today?
I can't speak for the rest of New England. I'm not aware of any others or any within New England. There are none to the best of our knowledge here in Massachusetts, to be honest with you, at this point we would not expect conditions to be such that would lend themselves to trees falling down on people or people getting into major traffic accidents because of the wind blowing them off a bridge or something like that. So as far as storm related type of events, so at this point we're not aware of anything, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that people are prepared and they will use enough common sense to not put themselves in harm's way.
Peter, when do you, from your emergency management perspective, expect the worst of the storm to hit? And I guess one of the additional concerns is because Sandy is so slow moving, how long do you think this, state of emergency or extra awareness will people have to be prepared for?
Well, the short answer is about 8 o'clock this evening, the high tide, the first high tide we have to deal with, will give us an indication of where we're going to stand with this event, both from the coastal flooding issues, and also at that point the winds are really going to be ramping up. That'll let us know whether we're in for a real long haul event or we're going to be dodging a bullet here. We know we're going to have to be concerned with at least the next two high tides following that, so certainly well into Tuesday night before we can feel we're going to be seeing sort of the light at the end of the tunnel in this event. You mentioned it's a slow-moving event. It could be well into Wednesday before we really have a good grasp of what the damages are, what the impacts are. Because remember, when these people lose power, as good as plans are and as many vehicles and personnel we have in the utilities have in position, they're not going to be able to go out there and start fixing things until the winds die down enough so those folks in those bucket trucks can, you know, do their work. They're certainly not going to put people in harm's way by, you know, putting them up in hurricane force winds in a bucket truck. So, you know, once the lights do go out, there is going to be a lag between that time and when crews can actually start their work.
Peter Judge is the Public Information Officer for the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency. He's speaking to us today from the Operations Center in Framingham. Thanks so much, Peter.
My pleasure. Be safe now.
And you're listening to WBUR's special coverage of Hurricane Sandy. I'm Anthony Brooks, co-host of Radio Boston.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We will have much more in a special hour of Radio Boston up next, including taking your calls, your stories, and your experiences of Hurricane Sandy. That's right up next at 3 o'clock. Stay with us. Radio Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Waves are pounding the shores of southern New England. In Boston, the winds are growing stronger by the hour, and thousands of Massachusetts residents are already without power as the effects of Hurricane Sandy intensify. The worst winds and flooding are expected to hit the region later this evening. Evan Higgins braved the high winds in Harwich earlier today.
I think it'll be worse than Hurricane Irene. We got a lot of water. Firewood so we can stay warm, you know, just waiting out the storm.
Emergency officials have issued coastal flood warnings and say the worst flooding could hit from Westport south to Fairhaven and Rhode Island. With high tide coming at 8 o'clock tonight, a surge of coastal flooding could be as bad or worse as that brought by Hurricane Bob in 1991. This huge storm is expected to batter the region throughout the night and well into tomorrow, meaning that folks like Charlie Blair, harbor master for Edgartown on Martha's Vineyard, are still on alert.
Hoping that the weather people are correct about the track and that it's going to go ashore well to the south of us. That storm ever came further north, I'm sure we get hammered.
In the greater Boston region today, schools and many businesses were closed. The MBTA suspended service earlier this afternoon. Amtrak canceled its northeast service, and airlines cancel flights in and out of Logan Airport.
Over the next hour, we will be bringing you all the latest news on Hurricane Sandy. Governor Deval Patrick is expected to speak this hour. We will be bringing you that as well. And we'll be taking your comments, your questions, and your stories. How are you weathering this storm? What are you seeing? How do you think it compares to some of New England's historic storms of the past? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK with your stories and observations of Hurricane Sandy. You can also track us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston.
And joining us now with the latest on Hurricane Sandy is meteorologist Mark Rosenthal. And Mark, give us the latest on this storm's position and what direction it's moving in.
Sure, absolutely. The storm now is located about 175 miles southeast of New York City. It's now racing off to the northwest at about 28 miles per hour. We'll make landfall very close to Philly, probably early this evening. Now, top winds are still up at 90 miles an hour, and the pressure continues to fall. Look at your barometer, 27.46, which makes it more intense than the hurricane of 1938 in terms of pressure.
And explain that, Mark. Why the low pressure? The low pressure essentially sucks in that cold air from the north, causing those winds?
The storm is deepening because normally, as we've been saying, when you think of a tropical system, it's a warm core. The middle of the storm is warm versus a wintertime storm that's cold. So the warm core is actually mixing with the cold air coming in from the west, and it's that cold shot of air representing high-level vorticity coming down from above to giving this storm a shot of energy, and that's why the pressure is really falling out. I mean, the bottom is really falling out, and the storm continues to deepen. Once again, it's a contrast between the cold to the west and the warm to the south.
Sure. And just how big is it? I mean, we were looking on a weather map just a little bit a moment ago before we went on the air, and we're talking about a storm with a huge diameter, right?
Oh, right. It's over 1,000 miles wide. I mean, with all kinds of rain and wind in the east and the northern side, and heavy, wet snow, as we've been saying, is falling through eastern Ohio and West Virginia, where they could get up to 2 feet of snow there tonight with hurricane force winds.
So as much as we are anticipating here, we're by no means taking the brunt of this storm.
No, we're not. But during the last hour, as we've been talking about, there's been a band of rain that's been developing from the Boston area further north as the east wind is meeting the northeast wind in the Boston area. The air is being forced to rise, and there's a convergence zone causing this tremendous area of rain to develop. There could be some localized flooding with that. Also, we're noting 34-foot seas 50 miles south of Nantucket. So it's a very angry ocean out there. So we continue to talk about the possibility of moderate coastal flooding for coastal South Shore down to Boston. Obviously, if people come and tell you to evacuate, do so. There could be severe coastal flooding. Cape Cod, the south side of the Cape, Narragansett Bay, down to New London, of course, Long Island, down into New York and New Jersey.
And Mark, finally, what does it look like in terms of what Boston and the greater Boston area is going to experience?
Well, let me tell you, overnight we're talking about rain bands coming in from the ocean. At times it'll be pouring, other times not doing much of anything. It'll be windy, temperatures in the 50s. We're talking about east winds picking up at 35 to 70 miles an hour. There could be wind gusts to 80 to 85 miles an hour over the Cape and the islands, and that should continue at least until 10 o'clock. Then after 10 o'clock, the winds are going to die down just a little bit.
All right. That's meteorologist Mark Rosenthal bringing us up to date with the position and power of Hurricane Sandy. Mark, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So a little bit more information on those angry seas that Mark Rosenthal was talking about. Apparently the region of ocean, as Anthony was mentioning, covered by Hurricane Sandy and at least the 12-foot high swells, an incredible 1,500 miles in diameter. That's half the distance across the United States, which means that the National Weather Service says by Tuesday, Lake Michigan could be experiencing 31-foot high waves. That's in Lake Michigan. But let's turn back now. Right here in Massachusetts, WBUR has reporters around the state and the region on the coast and inland. Let's check in with one of them now. WBUR Steve Brown is in New Bedford. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Meg. Yes, I'm at New Bedford City Hall, where the mayor just gave a quick briefing. And as a matter of fact, I have the mayor with me right now, and he will give us a briefing on Radio Boston. Mayor John Mitchell, how is it going in New Bedford today?
Well, Steve, I think it's been manageable so far. We've had about 33 incidents, and we've been able to clear all those. And we have about 400 NSTAR residents in the city of New Bedford without power. And we've been able to deal with that, and NSTAR is working on it. The worst is yet to come for New Bedford. We have an 8 o'clock high tide tonight. I'm keeping a close eye on because of the storm surge, because of our open harbors, and because the wind is about to shift and come up from the southeast, so it's going to push more water into our harbor. So although I have not ordered a mandatory evacuation, I strongly encourage residents of some of the low-lying areas near the water to evacuate to one of the two shelters that we set up.
Mayor Mitchell, this is Meghna.
In the shelters right now.
So far, not many. We have about 15 in one and only two in the other, but I expect that to grow.
Terrific. Again, that's Mayor John Mitchell of New Bedford, who's been keeping an eye on things here. Just heard a little while ago there was a chimney collapse somewhere in town. The fire chief was running off to that. They've been trying to keep folks away from the water down in southern New Bedford, where people have been going down to take a good look at the storm. Police have been moving people along, trying to keep them away from the breakwater.
WBUR Steve Brown in New Bedford. Thanks so much for that update, Steve.
Thanks, Megan.
And joining us now from Northborough is Charlotte McCormick. She's a spokesperson for National Grid. And Charlotte, welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we've been hearing varying reports of thousands, more than 10,000 power outages in Massachusetts. From your perspective, what is the state of power outages across the state, and what regions have been hit the hardest?
Well, it's actually been fluctuating. We've had scattered outages since this morning, and currently we're actually at about 42,000 customers who are experiencing outages across the Commonwealth. And if I had to pinpoint, I'd definitely say that the majority of those are coming from some of the coastal areas where you might suspect that that would be the case.
Right. And, of course, those power outages mainly due to wind and downed wires, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
So a word of warning to folks out there, if you're near a downed wire, obviously stay well clear of it.
Absolutely. It's one thing we stress as much as we possibly can. Just because a wire is down does not mean it is not live. In fact, chances are it is. So we strongly urge customers to stay away from any downed wires and give us a call to let us know about it so we can get a crew out there and get that scene safe as quickly as possible.
Now, I know you guys are probably working as hard as you can, and this is always maybe an annoying question to hear, but for folks who are out of power, how soon can they anticipate that power will be restored, or is this something that we have to wait for the worst of the blowing to go through, to pass by?
Well, you know, given the magnitude of this storm and the breadth of this storm, I know it's not what customers want to hear, but we're asking them to be prepared for extended outages. The fact of the matter is, you know, we're not going to be able to make any sort of estimation on restoration times until this storm blows over and we can go out and start beginning our damage assessment. We hope and suspect that that will be by daybreak tomorrow morning based on the current forecast. But again, we can't possibly begin to guess when power outages might subside until we're able to get out there and see exactly what's been done.
Sure. Governor Patrick, before the storm rolled in, he wanted the state's utility companies like yours to prepare emergency plans. And I know you've been working closely with the Department of Public Utilities. Can you tell us more about what National Grid's plan was and whether it's panning out so far?
Yeah, so far, you know, the real test will be tomorrow, but so far we think we're doing fairly well given the circumstances. Some of the changes in our preparations are what we've been implementing for this storm and as opposed to last year. And we know that we had frustrated customers last year that we didn't live up to their expectations and, quite frankly, didn't live up to our own expectations. So we've really been working aggressively to correct that. And some of the things we've done, for instance, include, you know, a better damage assessment process so that we can more quickly define those areas and dispatch crews to areas where we do have more hard-hit communities. And also a part of that is dispatching our line crews with our tree crews at the same time because oftentimes those two crews work hand in hand. One can't do the other unless the other is there. So those are a couple things. We've also dispatched community liaisons. One National Grid employee has been assigned to every community in the 172 communities we serve across the Commonwealth to be a direct conduit between us, that would be National Grid, and the community officials there to make sure that there's multiple daily communications about outages and restoration times. We've also started outreach to our contractors on a much earlier time frame than we did last year. We started that process early last week, and we have more than 500 crews from out of state that were here and staging by yesterday afternoon.
And these crews come from all over the place, right? They're not just local crews. They come from far and wide, right?
They sure do. We contracted crews from far away as California and Oregon and even Canada. And once the storm passes, we're actually going to expect a second wave of supplemental crews to arrive to further help with our restoration processes. And additional crews will also be available through other utilities, through the mutual aid system.
Well, new efforts there on the part of National Grid, and a big test for you all. Charlotte McCormick, spokesperson for National Grid, many thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Be safe.
This is WBUR and Radio Boston special coverage of Hurricane Sandy. You can join this conversation. What are you seeing outside your window right now? What has your experience of this storm been so far? Do you believe it when you hear utility officials such as what you just heard say they're doing their best, they're going to get people out and about as soon as they can, and that service will be up and running perhaps more smoothly than it has been in past storms? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're hearing that right now across Massachusetts, there are over 120,000 customers without power. At the Blue Hill Observatory, they've tweeted that they're observing wind gusts of over 68 miles per hour already. That's one of the highest places around here. So joining us now is Renee Fielding, director of Boston's Office of Emergency Management. Renee, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So you heard me read that tweet from the Blue Hills. How much of a concern is the strong winds that we're likely to see a little later this afternoon to you and the city of Boston? How much of a concern are they?
It's a great concern for us. Of course, with winds that high, you know, we see trees being taken down and uprooted, and we also, you know, see down power lines, which cause, you know, major power outages for the city.
And how many people do you know in Boston? I'm seeing maybe 10,000, maybe more already are out of power?
That's correct. That's the numbers that we're tracking right now.
And we heard a little bit earlier the utility officials saying that, you know, they've the new teams that go out together with the repair crews and the tree crews. That's happening here in Boston as well, isn't it?
It is right now. We have our Parks Department and our Public Works Department going out with NSTAR crews so that as they come on scene to a down wire and there's a tree involved, that they're able to, you know, cut the tree and dispose of it and allow NSTAR more effective and efficient, you know, time to fix the wires down.
And what are the current states of various neighborhoods in the city? I understand that Morrissey Boulevard in Dorchester may have been shut down due to flooding.
It was. It was shut down earlier this morning during the high tide for flooding. Right now, you know, it's pretty widespread across the city. We're seeing a lot of trees down and a lot of wires down. Mm. It's not isolated to a certain section of the city.
And Renee, I mean, Boston's a really interesting city when it comes to these kinds of major weather events because we have, you know, sort of more typical urban neighborhoods. We've also got neighborhoods on higher hills, and we've also got the large waterfront area. How's, you know, South Boston, East Boston, the North End, how are they all faring and prepared for this storm?
Right, so we do. They're faring well. I mean, again, we're seeing trees and branches down throughout the city, so no section of the city is isolated from this right now. But I think we've dispatched a lot of crews out, and we're addressing every concern as we're notified of it.
And what's the best way you'd recommend for Boston residents to really stay abreast or on top of the city's efforts?
Sure. So the mayor's really concerned about that. So what you know, if you have you see a power line or a tree down in your neighborhood, call the mayor's 4500 number. It's 617-635-4500. There are call takers that are going to be staffed 24/7 to take any calls and dispatch crews out to take care of the situation.
Renee Fielding, director of the City of Boston's Mayor's Office for Emergency Management. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick call here. Alex is calling from South Boston. You're on the air, Alex.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to call in and say I've seen a lot of limbs down. I just got off the highway. I'm driving through Dorchester now. I've seen a lot of vehicles sliding. My own truck, which is I drive a Class A truck, 60,000 pounds, has actually also been sliding around. Difficult to even close the door. I jumped out for a second, and as soon as I tried to climb back in, the wind was just too strong to pull against initially. But, yeah.
Well, Alex, it sounds like there's some real forces out there. Stay safe, drive carefully, and I think anyone hearing you, it's just a reminder, stay off the roads unless it's absolutely necessary. Let's go to line two. Monica Brady Meyerhoff is on the line from Route 9. Monica, good to have you.
Anthony, yeah, I called because I'm just coming down Route 9. I've been in the bunker, the emergency bunker, all morning, not really seeing the storm, and it really shocked me how flooded Route 9 is. especially going west, it's nearly impassable. That it is, the water is so deep, and there are crews in some spots trying to clear out the storm drainage, but it's down to one lane, and even coming east too around the Chestnut Hill area, there's one passage that's just you have to basically drive on the sidewalk to get through the water.
And Monica, are you seeing a lot of traffic out there, or are people staying off the roads?
It's not that bad, but it's a, you know, it's like Sunday morning traffic. You know, there are still people out there driving around pretty quickly, and then suddenly you hit a massive puddle. And I think soon a car is going to stall out, and then you won't be able to get down Route 9 at all.
All right. That's WBUR's Monica Brady-Myroff reporting from Route 9. Monica, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We're talking about Hurricane Sandy, and we'll be hearing a little later this hour from a live press conference with Governor Deval Patrick. We'll be bringing you reports from WBUR reporters. And we want to hear your stories as well. How's Sandy been treating you so far? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.
This is Radio Boston's special coverage of Hurricane Sandy. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And let's move right in now. We've got reporters stationed around the state. Let's go to Rachel Gottbaum, who's reporting for us from Dennis out on Cape Cod. She's at a shelter out there, I understand. Rachel, tell us where you are and what's going on.
Well, I'm at one of the three shelters here on Cape Cod. I'm in the gym of Dennis Yarmouth Regional High School. There's about 20 cots set up, and there's a bunch of elderly folks who've come. They haven't lost power yet, but they live alone, and they're worried about losing power. There's a 106-year-old woman who's here who lives by herself but felt that she was worried about the storm and came to get some help.
And, Rachel, what are local officials saying there about the possibility of flooding and about what people should be doing?
Well, they're worried mostly about beach erosion now because of the winds. So I was just over in the Chatham Harbor area, and the winds were up to 50 miles per hour, and they are expected to get up to 75 miles per hour. And the waves out there, are up to 30 feet, and there's some houses on the bluffs that they're concerned about, but mostly about erosion in the houses in the area here.
Sure, and I guess you're hearing as well, with high tide later tonight at about 8 p.m., that's when things might get really hairy out there, right?
Yes, and they are watching all the beaches here, and there have been some power outages, and folks are just, I spoke to a bunch of people over at the pier there, and they've stocked up, and they're going, after they've seen the waves, they're going home and socking it in for the night. So would you like to talk to Sergeant Cleve Daniels from the Dennis Police Department? He's got some things to tell you about what's going on here.
Absolutely. Put Sergeant Daniels on the phone.
Hello.
Sergeant Daniels, Anthony Brooks, Radio Boston. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Give us a sense of what you're advising folks out there as this storm increases in intensity.
Well, obviously, they've been asked to stay off the roads if that's possible. If it's unnecessary for them to be out, we ask that they stay in. Here at the shelter, we're trying to make people as comfortable as possible. We have about 20 people here now. We also have an animal component to our shelter where they can bring their pets, which does get people oftentimes to leave their homes. Some people don't like to leave because they're afraid of leaving their pets at home alone. So they're able to take advantage of that pet component we have here.
Sure. And, Sergeant, what are you anticipating as we move closer to that high tide and these winds continue to pick up? I gather that becomes a little more serious out there, right?
It does, and we anticipate, of course, our numbers growing during the peak of the high winds and the high tide. We can accommodate a few hundred people here. I don't know if we'll get that many people, but we can accommodate them and along with our staff. So
sure. Well, as you know, they're calling this one of the biggest storms ever. We've had a few days to know that it's coming. Do you feel prepared?
Yeah, I do. Luckily, with technology and forecasting abilities these days, we're able to prepare a little bit more efficiently than we have in the past. So I think between all the multi-agencies that are involved, I think they do a pretty good job.
All right, Sergeant. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
We are talking about Hurricane Sandy and the effects that it's already having on Massachusetts and all of New England. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's take a call from Fitchburg. Matt's calling. You're on the air, Matt.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you out there?
Doing okay. The rain is, the skies have really opened up as far as a really heavy heavy rain out here. There's some small limbs down, but it hasn't been too bad. I work for Verizon as a technician, and we started out the day, you know, with our normal service orders and stuff. But you know, we can tell it's definitely going to be a busy day tomorrow, and I'm sure for the next week, 2 weeks.
And Matt, so you said you're a service technician for Verizon. I presume that means that you know, go out to residents' homes when service calls are made. Do you anticipate a lot of calls in the next day or so? Take us a little bit inside to how that's all going to get done. Is it possible for how soon after the storm sort of decreases can you guys go out there?
Well, it really, you know, I mean, it really depends on the extent of the damage as far as power goes, because you know, power cables that come down are, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of potential hazards after major storms like this. So, you know, the company starts taking calls, you know, trouble calls, but then everything has to be sorted out because they're working with the power company as well. So things have to be sorted out as to, you know, where can we go? And then, you know, we're also responsible for going and reporting back to our company so they can notify power.
Well, it sounds like a major logistical challenge from everyone, including the telecommunications company. Matt, thank you so much for your call from Fitchburg. Let's move over to the South Shore, where WBUR's Karen Given is in Scituate, where some neighborhoods have been evacuated. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Meghna.
So tell us what's happening in Scituate right now.
Well, right now I am dry and warm in my car in a parking lot in the harbor. I would take you out there in the wind, but then you wouldn't be able to hear me anymore. It's pretty intense out there. The waves are coming up on the shore, and it is not high tide. We've passed high tide. But when I talked to the town administrator, Patricia Van Casey, earlier, she said this is the time of day they were really worried about, not high tide, but they were worried about the wind intensifying with the storm.
Have you been able to talk to them about how many people were evacuated, how many followed the evacuation orders, how successful that was?
Well, yeah. So there has been a voluntary evacuation since 9 a.m. this morning. The town shelter at the high school has been open since 8 p.m. last night, but only two people have checked in. People either are not evacuating or they're evacuating friends' houses and things like that. There isn't an evacuation order for the whole town. It's just for certain areas. And the people at the shelter say they have done check-ins with people who are at risk, and everybody seems to have a plan to stay safe.
Well, Karen, a little earlier this hour, we had a caller who drives a truck. It's a 30-ton vehicle, and he said he was feeling his truck shake all over the road. So stay safe in your car in Scituate.
Thanks. My little Subaru is bouncing around.
WBUR's Karen Given reporting live from Scituate.
And we are bringing you the latest about Hurricane Sandy and this growing storm. Let us know where you are, what you're seeing. Join the conversation, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Sherry, who's calling from Newton. Hi, Sherry. What are you seeing out there?
Hi. Well, I lost my power about an hour ago. Tree branch fell on some wires. The fire trucks came by, blocked off Cabot Street in Newton, and NSTAR trucks have been by, and I got a call back from NSTAR saying I'll have power back by 8 p.m.
So they're being pretty responsive, it sounds like.
It sounds like it. I hope I have power by 8 p.m.
All right, Sherry. Well, thanks for the call, and we wish you all the luck in the world. This message from Energy and Environmental Affairs Secretary Rick Sullivan, who says customers need to understand that while there are lots of assets and resources on the ground, they will not be able to put the bucket trucks in the air until the heavy winds are over, because it's just an unsafe condition. So that word to customers that may be frustrated by the power outages and how long they last. Let's move on now to Deb Becker, who's reporting from Revere Beach. Hi, Deb. Are you with us?
I am, Anthony. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Probably a little drier than you. What are you seeing out
there?
That's
right. You're dry. I am in my car also, my shaking car. And there's very little visibility. Very, very strong winds. There's these windswept torrents of rain and sand that slap against you as you walk along the beach here in Revere, and you look at the churning high waves of the ocean just crashing onto the shore. There's a lot of traffic here, unbelievably, Anthony. Cars are driving through Revere Beach Boulevard. Everybody wants to get a look at the hurricane-whipped ocean. A lot of people are on the beach, literally walking on the beach, taking photos, and I heard that some people actually tried to surf today, but police told them to get out of the water.
I was going to say, our local safety officials, the police, discouraging people, obviously, from surfing, but even from being on the beach.
Absolutely. Because, you know, there is some minor flooding. The roads are all passable, and there are some downed power lines, but they have some state police roadblocks here on Revere Beach Boulevard. They're telling people to keep moving. They're telling people to get off the beach. They're advising folks to stay indoors, to watch this storm from a safer place, if they will. There are very few businesses open here. I did stop at the iconic Kelly's Roast Beef stand to see what was up there, and there's a big canopy up around the stand that's also whipped by the wind and sand, and the manager there told me that staff volunteered to come in today. He says they've been busy all day with spectators trying to get a glimpse of the storm. And a lot of the folks out here who are watching the storm are young people who didn't have school today. And many of them say they're here because they think it's exciting, and they describe it as awesome and beautiful. And they say right now, at least, it doesn't appear to be too bad of a storm, and they don't feel particularly threatened by Sandy.
Well, it is historic, but once again, we want to sort of convey the words that public safety officials are putting out, that it can get dangerous in a hurry, so please be cautious out there. WBUR reporter Deborah Becker reporting from Revere Beach. Thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
So another reason why you shouldn't underestimate Sandy, this one's a monster. The tropical storm force winds from Hurricane Sandy span an area of ocean 940 miles in diameter. North Carolina all the way to the island of Bermuda, 700 miles to the east, are all under tropical storm warnings. This is not a small storm. This is a serious one to take very seriously. So give us a call with your impressions of Sandy so far. How's it been going? Do you have power? Are you seeing the wind, the rain? Are you hearing from friends who maybe live in areas that are being hit harder right now? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And do you think people do have the tendency to underestimate Mother Nature? Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. Emily is calling from Alston. You're on the air, Emily.
Hi.
Hi, what's your thought today? How has the storm been treating you so far?
Well, I had to go to work this morning. I work at a residential treatment facility, so the girls live there, you know, obviously 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So as staff, we have to be there for them and switch out the previous shift. So I just wanted to, I think it's important to mention all those people that do have jobs where they are mandated to be there, even when we have our governor telling us to stay off the roads.
Emily, thank you so much for your call, and you make an excellent point, because there are a lot of people who, even if they wanted to stay home today, could not, including a disaster management, emergency management, city and state officials, everyone who's hearing this who happens to be at work. Emily, thank you for your call, and I do hope you stay safe as well. And another way, perhaps in the modern age, to stay safe is this. Well, that's the sound of a smartphone telling me that I have a new ping, and that's ping as in the ping for alert system. And we're going to talk about social media in just a minute, but Governor Deval Patrick is in Framingham giving a live press conference on Sandy right now.
Including a number of hospitals. I should add that hospitals by law must have generators at the ready, so there are no hospitals that don't have a form of electric generation, but some have lost their utility-generated power. No injuries or serious damage have been reported. There are a couple of road closures, a section of Route 28 down in the Cape between Orleans and Chatham was closed, may still be closed. Morrissey Boulevard, I think, has been open and closed depending on the tides. Winthrop Shore Drive, I think, is another one close in that has been. But I would say all in all, we're holding our own. We are, as I say, an hour and a half into the most serious part of the storm, with many, many hours ahead of us. And because we have many more hours of forecast high winds, I think I am not ready to make the call on whether to close state government tomorrow. I have talked to a number of mayors who are planning to close their city governments or to call off school for tomorrow. I'm not prepared to go that far yet. We're going to continue to monitor this as a statewide matter, and then check back with each other and then with you a little later in the day or in the evening. I will say that the guidance we've offered from the beginning continues: stay off the roads and indoors. As the wind picks up and branches break and a number of trees are down and wires are down, the hazard for individuals is greater, and the need for emergency workers to be able to move around without encumbrance is enormous. So as much as possible, stay off the roads and indoors. Remember to be sure you have enough food and water, medications that may be necessary, a flashlight with some extra batteries to be able to weather through this. I want to just return to the point about the proper use of generators. Many, many of our neighbors have portable generators now, and it's vitally important that they be properly ventilated, because they do throw off odorless and deadly carbon monoxide. So making sure that the manufacturer's instructions have been followed and the generators themselves are outside or in a well-ventilated place is important. We don't want to compound a situation that's already highly risky with that sort of man-made risk. Everybody's here, happy to answer any questions that any of you may have.
Do you get a sense at this point that things are going as you predicted earlier today, or is it still too early to know that?
Well, Jen, I think it's going well, but it's nature, and it can change in a minute. We've had I think 4 or 5 hours later in reaching the period of strongest winds than were forecast at the beginning of last night's call. Mm-hmm. So we are not as far into the period of high winds as we expected we would be at this point. So I would say, in that sense, it's early early times. The number of people without power as a result of the winds being so high in the last hour and a half has gone up considerably. The utilities are coordinating, I think, relatively well. They're checking with us. Their representatives are all here. And we get pretty regular updates, hourly updates at least.
What is your next high tide, and how much damage or how much fear do you have that there'll be damage from that?
There's an East Coast and then a South Coast high tide, but you may want to say a little bit more about that.
The next high tide that we're concerned with is 8 p.m. along the South Coast, and we expect to see a significant surge the entire South Coast from the Rhode Island border right through to the Cape.
That was a live press conference in Framingham with Governor Deval Patrick. You heard him say that the number of people with power outages has increased substantially in the last hour and a half. It's now over 110,000 across the state. You also heard Governor Patrick say Massachusetts so far is, quote, holding our own, but there are many hours ahead in this storm, and it is nature. It can change in a minute.
Stay with us. Our coverage of Hurricane Sandy continues on Radio Boston, including how this big storm is affecting the political races here in Massachusetts and nationally, with Election Day just over a week away. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Thank you. This is Radio Boston's special coverage of Hurricane Sandy. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're keeping track of the storm and keeping you informed about the latest developments as it bears down on our region.
In a moment, we will have an update from meteorologist Mark Rosenthal. But first, the politics of Sandy. With or without Hurricane Sandy, Election Day is just 8 days away, so what are the political consequences of this storm?
And joining us to talk briefly about that are two members of our political roundtable, Nancy Dwight, former executive director of the National Republican Congressional Committee and current chair of Dwight Partners. Hey, Nancy.
Hey. Hello from Boston.
Hello from Boston. And Susan Tracy, the former Democratic state rep and current president of the Strategy Group. Welcome to you, Susan.
Hey, Anthony. Hey, Nancy.
So let's talk a little bit about what this does to the campaign season. I mean, campaigns are nothing if not planned. Planning is everything. A major storm like this is certainly unplanned. Both Mitt Romney and President Obama had to hastily rearrange their campaigns recently. Mr. Obama, of course, has to oversee the federal response to Sandy. What does this storm do to this race at this late day? Nancy Dwight, let me start with you.
Well, I just wrote the headline on my pad in front of me, Storm Stalls a Tied Race 1 Week Out. a situation like this, President Obama and Senator Brown and Congressman, the two incumbent congressmen in New Hampshire, all of whom are in competitive races, they revert back to being the elected officials that were once elected in their previous races. So that is a benefit to the extent that they can carry out what it is they are meant to do. I noticed today, for instance, that Senator Brown had been to several locations already, shelters and rescue operations. The president has gone back to the White House. He's already had one press conference. So Governor Romney, on that side of the equation, Governor Romney's campaign certainly is paying attention to events, doesn't want to in any way intrude on the president's message or this very serious circumstance here on the East Coast. At the same time, he and the others are probably, I would be guessing, recutting their advertising, taking a look at a softer approach to the next 8 days.
Sure, a softer approach because some people might be recovering from pretty serious damage. Susan Tracy, Nancy suggesting there, among other things, an advantage maybe for the president to look presidential and look like he's in charge, but there's some risks as well, right?
Well, yeah, I'm thinking a few things. I'm thinking, first, as long as people are safe, they're probably thrilled to have a break from the campaigning for a while. And I'm thinking that the constant Sandy coverage might make them welcome the final few days of the campaign back, so maybe there's an opportunity for everyone in that. But I do think the president has an opportunity to be presidential and be a leader, and I think that helps him. But there certainly is risk. I think Nancy said this. There's only so much they can do. You have to depend on a lot of people to come through. You know, you're depending on power companies to get out there and get people's power back on. I lost my power for 4 days last year, and it's kind of quaint at the beginning, and it's very frustrating at the end. So you could have some very frustrated voters coming up in the next few days. What I will say is, in the path of this storm, from a presidential perspective, we're really talking about two swing states. We're talking about Virginia and we're talking about New Hampshire. The bulk of the swing states, if you go to your weather.com and start plugging in those other states, you'll see that they're really not going to be affected by this. So I see opportunity for the president to be presidential, and I think that as long as all of the groups that they're counting on to come through, from power companies to emergency response teams, if everyone's doing their part, I think it's a good opportunity for him.
Well, Nancy Dwight, speaking of risks, I'm thinking back to President George W. Bush's response to Hurricane Katrina, for which he was roundly criticized for not being present enough. So that's the kind of risk we're talking about, right?
Well, clearly, we're not in that situation here. First off, it isn't Labor Day weekend. It's a very focused time of the year. The entire East Coast is involved in this, and that's a lot of population focused on a very swirling bit of map. And the other thing I was thinking about today is the amount of, whether it's through Twitter or through Facebook or through your show, I mean, the constant alerts and communications we're getting, we just weren't getting that, I'm afraid, in the Katrina period. Mm-hmm. And obviously the president himself is focused, as are all public officials. Nobody wants any danger or anything terrible to happen here. I think if I could pick up on something that my friend Susan just said,
sure.
One of the interesting aspects to this from a political standpoint, I think, is that if this storm moves onshore and is as large as it looks to be you were talking about how large it is, and I was actually looking at the battleground states and thinking to myself that this really could almost affect six states directly. But on the other side of that are the states that aren't affected, such as Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Colorado, four very important states where the skies are sunny and provide an opportunity for the campaigns to shift their focus out to those states, which I think we might see in the next hour or two, or a few days at least.
Well, it's really interesting. I want to thank you both for joining us. President Obama was asked today what he thought, if he was worried about the impact on the election. He said, "I'm not worried about the impact on the election," referring to this storm. "The election will take care of itself," he said. "Right now, our number one priority is to make sure that we're saving lives." So that from President Obama earlier today. Nancy Dwight, former executive director of the National Republican Congressional Committee and current chair of Dwight Partners, and Susan Tracy, a former Democratic state rep and current president of the Strategy Group, two members of our regular political roundtable. Thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Well, a couple more quick updates on how Sandy is affecting the greater Boston area. The MBTA discontinued service for trains and buses at 2 o'clock this afternoon and says that closure could extend into tomorrow. And as for Hurricane Sandy as a whole, the eye of the storm is moving at a somewhat sluggish 28 miles per hour, but that's not a good thing because that means peak winds are being clocked at 90 miles an hour. That's according to the National Hurricane Center. Well, when you hear numbers like that, high winds and slow-moving storms, for a lot of people, that reminds them of the hurricane of 1938 and the blizzard of 1978, both of which really battered New England. To remind us how bad it really got and to take a look at how Sandy has some similarities with those two storms is historian Michael Togis. He's author of 10 Hours Until Dawn and Overboard, a true blue water odyssey of disaster and survival. He joins us from Plymouth. Michael, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Megan. Thank you for having me.
I hope you're doing, you're batting down the hatches there in Plymouth, but I wonder if you've studied the hurricane of 38 and the blizzard of 78 very, very closely. How is it that you see Hurricane Sandy as similar to those two sort of leviathan of weather systems that we had in the past?
Well, with the blizzard of 78, in my book, 10 Hours Until Dawn, I described, like, came up the coast. And instead of veering out to sea like so many of these do, this winter hurricane started to drift towards the coast and then stalled south of Nantucket. And as you mentioned with Sandy, that it was slowing down, that's never a good thing when it slows down.
Michael, when I spoke with you a little earlier today, you talked to me about how, you know, one of maybe the things that people don't often remember about the past two storms, those big ones in 38 and 78, was really the danger that people faced at sea.
Yes, and I've been following on the news, the tall ship Bounty went down with 16 people on board, and they've rescued 14, but two are still missing, and that's similar to my book, Overboard, where the boat went down in the exact same spot. And so one of the survivors has really painted a vivid picture of what it's like to be in the ocean on your own, alone, just pummeled by waves.
It sounds like a harrowing experience. I've just got a couple more seconds with you, but I wonder, do you think that Hurricane Sandy has the potential to capture the imagination of New Englanders the way the hurricane of 38 and the blizzard of 78 did?
Every storm is just so unpredictable, but if we get an incredible storm surge that'll, you know, tear apart the coast, and then inland, if we get the flooding like we did with Irene, it will definitely be in people's memories. But, you know, these storms all do their own thing, and each one is different.
Michael Togis is author of 10 Hours Until Dawn and Overboard, a true blue odyssey of disaster and survival. He spoke with us today from Plymouth. Michael, thanks so much, and stay safe.
Thank you. Waiting for our power to come back on.
And we have just a couple minutes left, and we want to do a quick check-in with Mark Rosenthal, WBUR meteorologist, to just get the latest on Hurricane Sandy. Mark, what are you seeing out there before we say goodbye today?
All right. Well, the winds are very strong now in Boston, gusting to 60 at Logan Airport, gusting to 75 miles an hour. on top of Blue Hill, in anywhere from 50 to 65 mile an hour gust over Cape Cod and the islands. Radar shows some heavy rain bands now coming up at us from the south and southeast, and that's really going to be the story for the rest of the night. I am concerned about the next high tide, as we've been talking about. It looks like a moderate coastal flood situation for Boston and coastal North Shore, but perhaps a major to severe flood situation late tonight for Cape Cod in the south coast of New England, as Sandy continues to move inland into the Jersey Shore tonight and then moving into central Pennsylvania by morning, still with lots of rain and lots of wind to boot, at least for the next 12 to 18 hours. Tomorrow, not quite as bad as today, but still occasional rain around, and winds could gust up to 55 miles an hour.
So still lots of wind, lots of rain. So if you're thinking, folks are thinking of going to work or back to school tomorrow, they should check their local media outlet, including WBUR, to find out if that's safe. Does that sound about right, Mark?
That sounds like a plan, absolutely.
All right, that's Mark Rosenthal, WBUR meteorologist, bringing us up to date with the latest on the movements of Hurricane Sandy.
Well, as Massachusetts continues to brace for the brunt of the storm, which is coming in later hours, the Federal Emergency Management Authority says nationally, Hurricane Sandy could cost up to $3 billion, $3 billion in damage nationally. So if that's a number that convinces you this is a storm to take seriously, please do stay inside, stay safe, and stay tuned into WBUR as we continue our coverage of Hurricane Sandy with All Things Considered and on WBUR.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again for more Radio Boston tomorrow.